Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Tim Heuer.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming this afternoon. I know there's been a lot of great sessions so far. Hopefully, everybody's been excited about what they've seen. Round of applause for everyone who's excited. No? All right. It's my privilege to talk to you today as a representative from the Windows User Interface Platform team, and specifically to talk to this audience about what we've done for XAML developers. Any XAML developers around? All right. It's good. So first and foremost, I want to say on behalf of the team in UIP and the hundreds of developers and testers and program managers, thank you. Thank you for building apps. Thank you for your feedback and that constant flow of participation and letting us know what we've done right, what we've done wrong, and where we can improve. We honestly, sincerely thank that level of feedback. This session is being streamed, and all the development team and testers and program managers who help build the platforms for you are watching. So if you see a favorite feature, feel free to shout and applaud. And if there's something you don't like, feel free to just aim everything at me, not at my team. So they're all back there listening for your excitement. So honestly, thank you for that feedback. So on that note, we did hear a lot of feedback from Windows 8. I would imagine a lot of it came. I see some friendly faces in here that gave me specific feedback on what we delivered in Windows 8. And so I hope that you're able to see that we're able to respond to that. You heard Steve B talk this morning about these rapid turnarounds, and hopefully you'll see what we've been able to deliver for you. So I wanted to share a piece of feedback that we received, and talked about some controls that we were missing in the platform here. I'm happy to note you can now, yes. Never before have three combo boxes received that much applause. So yes, we do have date pickers and time pickers built into the platform now. Now, the interesting thing about date pickers is the simplicity in the design that was chosen for Windows. There's an immense amount of complexity behind the scenes when you take into account how we have to work for all the different various calendars, locales, and regions. It's not actually an easy problem to solve. However, we have solved it, so we've delivered a date picker and a time picker in the platform for you. The typical things that you would expect, change notifications around the dates, being able to control the custom formats of the calendar, and also the parts within the calendar. For the time picker, we support the 24-hour and 12-hour clock modes as well. Interestingly enough, the test that runs behind the date picker and time pickers in all of our UI platforms takes roughly 36 hours to complete. That's how complex calendar systems are. When you take into account things like certain years in Samoa decided not to have December 31st and how that affects time and things like that. So a lot of complexity behind these three beautiful combo boxes for the date time experience. So this is what it looks like. I'm going to do a mixture of some code snippet slides as well as some live demos today. I chose to not do some of the simple ones and just show some slide snippets so that I can focus on the more interesting demos that are live. Here's roughly what the markup would look like for a date picker and a time picker. You can see that the day format, you can specify a pretty complex format that you want. Now, you may look at that and say, wow, what are all these squiggly brackets? How am I supposed to know? And I'm not always going to have the documentation sitting next to me. Thankfully, our friends in VS are creating a great design time experience around the editor experience for you, so you don't have to memorize the date or time formats, which are string-based. You'll be able to get auto completion and IntelliSense for you. Another piece of feedback we heard was that we needed to land one of these marquee experiences in XAML around this concept of flyouts. Now, flyouts is a very visible thing within the Windows systems. It encompasses these kind of lightweight commanding surfaces that leverage this, what we call this light dismiss layer. This command area comes up, you can tap around it, it automatically dismisses. Now, we had built in Windows 8, we had built primitives around this space so that you could take advantage of these yourself. In XAML, we surfaced those through the pop-up class and there was a light dismiss mode on pop-up. However, there were several challenges that you told us in being able to deliver land certain flyout experiences. So we wanted to help with that. Now, most commonly, you see flyouts typically from the app bar experience. So if we look at our app here, we would launch the app bar. We have certain kind of app bar buttons. Maybe we want to have a menu system where we have choices of options for developers. So we could have a flyout with different options. Or maybe you wanted to have a flyout with any arbitrary content, your own visual tree that you put in there with text or some type of confirmation dialogue. This is how we've chosen to accomplish that. We believe that flyouts, the most primary use case is around the button and invoking from the button. So what we've done with flyout is we've delivered you a couple more primitives that are based on top of that, one being flyout and the second being a menu flyout. If you look here, we've added basically an attached property on button for you to put your content in. So this is the markup way of doing it. We believe this is the most obvious use case and what people will most likely do. So this is that example of any arbitrary content. I have this flyout. I'm going to put a stack panel and some stuff in it, and it will surface. The menu flyout, by default, we will handle all the UX guidelines for you. The animations are built in. The positioning logic is built in. Pixel perfect to what it needs to be so that you don't have to worry about that. Focus on your content and not the actual things that the system needs to provide. That said, if you need a different specific user experience, we've created that flexibility within it as well. So we give you the ability to choose the placement. We have placement logic that's in there. So if you say, hey, I want this flyout to be on the right-hand side, but for some reason, if maybe in the multi-window in the mode that there's not enough room on the right-hand side, we automatically have the logic to say, hey, you've asked for it to be on the right. We can't fit it there. We'll flip it to the left. And we'll continue to go until we find a place that we can fit it. But by default, we're going to follow the UX guidelines for you, and you can override those with some specific properties. The menu flyout is exactly the same, although it's just a different base class. So we have menu flyout, and in there we have other primitives for you to leverage that are menu specific. So a menu flyout item that you give a text property for, that you also can handle a tapped or click event or bind a command to. We have a separator, which is the obvious line. And we have toggle menu flyouts, which just provide the check marks capability there. Now, there was another type of flyout that we wanted to ensure that you delivered the kind of landed the experience on for the UX guidelines. And that was the settings experience. A very important experience for your app to be able to have app-wide settings in a common, predictable way for users to be able to access them at any time. So you may have heard this is referred to as the settings flyout. And I'm proud to say that we are now providing you a control out of the box to, again, implement the settings experience with you being able to focus on the content and not have to worry about the placement, the animation, localization, right to left, where it comes from the edge invocation, or any of that experience. So this is the default experience. You may have read in the guidelines that a flyout should be 346 pixels or one other size. We made it flexible that you can choose the default experience, which is the narrower one, or just add any arbitrary width, and you'll be able to specify the settings flyout. So that's the flyout experiences, and we hope that these are fill the necessary gaps for you. And again, we do all the work to incorporate the UX guidelines for you, handle the navigation, handle the closing and the animations. And Visual Studio provides a great design time experience on all of these controls, which I'll show in a moment. The other thing we heard was around theming. Now, out of the box, the framework provides you two types of themes, one we call dark and one we call light. Now, if you're using the default Visual Studio templates, they're based on the dark theme, which is actually the default. Some people may have not known you can actually, so what dark and light theme is a dark theme is dark backgrounds and lighter foregrounds, and a light theme is the inverse. You could change the app, in Windows 8, you could change the app-wide theme one time during app initialization. You could have done this through declaratively through AppXAML by saying requested theme equal light or dark, or in your app constructor. But during the course of your application, you couldn't have changed anything. You had the user, if you had settings preferences to have the user choose one, they would have to restart the app for it to initialize to that value. But more importantly, when you think about what we just talked about in the flyout case, you may have had a dark theme and were trying to achieve the proper UX guidance around flyouts, which are actually light themed. And that was something that was very hard to do. And in fact, what people had to do was retemplate every control that was going to be in the flyout and change that. That adds more XAML to you. That adds more negative performance to us because we have to parse more XAML that you probably didn't want to write to begin with. Now, we call this API requested theme because of high contrast. It's not a definitive theme. It's important to understand that. Your app is saying, I request this theme. High contrast will always overwrite that theme. We honor the accessibility requirements of the user. So if you say requested theme is light, but the user has chosen a high contrast in their control panel, they will be delivered the high contrast theme. So that's something to keep in mind as app authors and control developers more specifically. So how have we solved some of these theming challenges for you? Well, we've moved the concept of requested theme to any UI element tree. So this allows you to have a dark themed app and anywhere in your visual tree set a requested theme to any other theme. As an example here, I have a dark theme, and in my stack panel, I've said I want requested theme to be light, and that element and any of its children are going to follow that theme. So how do we do this? This is a snippet from generic XAML. Generic XAML is the definition of all our base control templates. This is a snippet from a button. It's obviously not the complete template, but just kind of the first few elements. And you'll see that in button, we have several properties. And these properties map to what we call static resources and these defined theme brushes. So background is mapping to a solid color brush. And we've defined this solid color brush in a theme dictionary. We're providing a dark, a light, and high contrast themes for this button. Now, in Windows 8, the definition says static resource, go find this brush. So it's kind of a one-time lookup. It applies the brush and never really changes for the course of the lifetime of that app. So what we've done in Windows 8.1 around being able to allow you to extend the theming nature is we've created theme resource specifically for this purpose, and more specifically for these concepts around UI kind of coloring. This less applies to data templates, although you can use it for data templates. I haven't seen an incredible use case around that, but it's more so around the kind of color theming. So theme resource, from a developer standpoint, operates the same as static resource. You could literally do a find and replace and do theme resource and static resource. If you're familiar with WPF and the concepts around dynamic resource, this is more closely associated to what dynamic resource is. It is not a global dynamic resource. It is a dynamic resource specific to theme dictionaries. So we have changed. We have done all this work for you. This is actually the snippet from the new generic XAML for apps. So for all intrinsic controls, you have to do nothing. If you want to mix themes, you can just simply set the requested theme wherever you'd like. So let's take a look at some other examples around the control space and what we've done. So if we go to the demo machine. And so I have here, that resolution is not what I'm seeing on my screen. Let me take a look at some of the other things that we've done. Is it possible to fix the resolution? Let's go back to the slide machine. If we can fix the resolution, I don't think they're going to find much value in seeing that. So we'll come back to that. I'll actually show you some things that we have in there. So one of the controls that you may have seen in some of the early sessions is the hub control. And this is a new concept around heterogeneous content. Now, one of the main controls in the Windows design experience was the list view. And in XAML, we have a list view and a grid view for kind of vertical and horizontal layout. Specifically, this allowed you, if you saw like basically the start screen app, you can think of as a grouped data or grouped grid view concept. And in fact, we delivered a Visual Studio template for you around this grouped grid view concept. Now, we heard a lot of people trying to create similar experiences around kind of these hub patterns or these hub-like experiences. A great example of this is pretty much all of the Bing app experiences have this concept of a hub, where when you launch the app, you see what we kind of call this hero tile or this hero image, this big, you know, great, awesome visual at the beginning, and then sectioned off content that may be heterogeneous. It may not be the same data. If you look at something like the Netflix app, that is more of a traditionally grouped grid view. It's the movie titles that are grouped by genre. Something like the Bing Travel app is travel content grouped by just, you know, section. You know, one I may have, here's a list of destinations, which may be a list view. Here's some pictures, which may be just a, you know, a grid view or a wrap panel or something like that. Or here's a form, or here's an ad. And so we've created this hub control to be able to deliver on that pattern of a hub pattern. And we're back up. So let's take a look. Thank you. My mouse still doesn't work. I can't fix my mouse. OK, so we have, and we've delivered a Visual Studio template for you around this hub experience. Let's just take a quick look at what that entails here. So the Visual Studio template, let me open up the hub page, which is actually the starting page. We have a good design time experience around the hub. We'll show, like we always do in the designer. I'm going to give you some teasers on some of the tools. Immediately following this session is Uni's session on the improvements in Blend tool specifically in Visual Studio for XAML developers. I highly encourage you to go to that for a deeper dive on some of those, but I'll whet your appetite here a little bit. So we have this hub view, and you can see that I can really only see one aspect of the viewport on the screen. As we go down, let's take a look at what the hub looks like. The hub is essentially a series of hub sections, which are effectively content controls. So you can see that I have a hub here that defines the actual control. I can put a header on it, which has a header template, or I can simply just put text. And then within each area there, I can put hub sections. And each hub section, again, can have its own header, and then it just any arbitrary content. Now you see I clicked on one section here, and I forgot to close my email. No, we don't want that. We can see that when I clicked on this section, did you notice what the designer did? Because it was a section that was off screen or not going to be completely on screen, it moved that into view on the design surface. So as you navigate in the designer or in the editor, as you notice that I just clicked in code here, if I go to the next section, it will scroll that section into view as well. So we have a great design time experience around the hub. Now, one thing to note about the hub is that, and a common theme that you'll see around the XAML and actually all the UI frameworks is performance. Now, we've made an explicit design decision around the hub to make sure that we defer loading of those content sections. If you had, now it's not good design to have a hub with 100 sections, but if you did, we wanted to make sure that when somebody launched your app, that they were only going to be staring at the first screen and they weren't going to have to wait to do something on the UI in order for the other 99 sections to load. So you may see that there's an interesting markup there where we actually specify the data template rather than content. And that allows us to get deferred content loading of these sections. So as the hub loads, we'll go and load each section one by one. And that's a performance optimization that you get for free. Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about was the templates themselves. How many people are best friends with standardstyles.xaml? Yeah. Well, you can break up with standardstyles.xaml. We've taken almost every single framework style and put it into the framework for you. You don't need to have any base text definitions or anything in your app anymore. Let's take a look at some of those and what we've done there. Yes, cheers. In fact, let's take a look at an example here. I'm going to emulate what we used to have in standard styles by putting some app bar button styles in. And let's go here and add an app bar. Now, what you would have done is say button style equal static resource. Look at that. We now have autocomplete IntelliSense on static resources as long as we can find them. So this is what we would have done for developing. If you can type. Maybe you had a second button. Have you ever wanted to just highlight something and like surround it with a stack panel? Something like that? So working with the Visual Studio team, we've added a lot of great editor experiences. Again, these are just kind of some teasers. XAML code snippets are capable now for you to be able to do your custom ones. And then we're probably going to ship some code snippet packs on the Visual Studio Gallery, as well as IntelliSense across the board on theme or static resources. Now, we have this app bar control, and you had to use buttons and the stack panel, and we don't want you to have to do that anymore. So if you're we still have the app bar, and we consider that a primitive, right? That's kind of the surface that comes and listens to those commands. If you want to have just a prescriptive app bar that has buttons and you want keyboarding and left, right arrow and things like that, we've created a new control for you called the command bar. And within the command bar, you have primary and secondary commands. Now, these map to the UX guidelines, where if you set the primary commands, they're on the right side of the user's screen, and the secondary commands are on the left side. Now, what you can put within those is UI commands. Specifically, instead of having to rely on standard styles and a button style, we're delivering strongly typed app bar buttons for you. And so I can put an app bar button on here, and I can say icon is play, label is play. And that's the simplest thing for an app bar button. So I can put these in a collection in the primary commands, and they would just work. So when I would run this application, the app bar comes up. If the user keyboard arrows through things, it goes through and carousels through them. The other thing that app bar button and the command bar does for you is, again, helps you meet those UX guidelines, one of which is as your screen size gets smaller, that your commanding surfaces are different. I encourage you to go to Sarah McDevitt's presentation about screen sizes and scaling, where she talks about this a little bit more. But effectively, if you have more commands than are going to be able to be viewed on the screen, we want you to change the UI of those commands, and primarily to shrink the margins and drop the labels. Using the new controls, we do this for you. We automatically know when the window size is not going to be able to draw the buttons that are in the command bar, and we will drop the margins and drop the labels for you and keep shrinking them automatically for you until everything can fit. And if things still can't fit, we will drop the secondary commands to ensure that the primary commands are always visible to the user. And again, using these new controls, you automatically get these for free. The other thing that I wanted to show you was the experience. I mentioned the experience around the static resources or moving the standard styles into the framework. Now, here's a good example of that. We have one that's title text block style. That's a framework style, and maybe you want to know how that's defined. One thing the Visual Studio team did was go to definition in XAML. So right on this style, I can hit F12. It will take me exactly to where that definition is, and now it's constructed. And so this is it took me to, basically it opened up the design time generic XAML, took me to that definition, and went to town. Now that IntelliSense that you saw on static resource, you get that on all the framework styles. So if you had a text block and you said style, we will enumerate all the text block target type styles for you to choose from. So it's not just things that are in your app, it's things that are in the framework as well. Okay, great. If we can go back to the presentation. So we saw the hub, and there's that kind of that development pattern of using the data template for the performance optimization. Here's the, some snippets of the app bar button. What you saw me do was the top, which was the very quick and terse method where we mapped the Sego UI symbol font to 120, I think it's 128 symbols that you can specify just a keyword in, which is in the documentation, and we'll draw the glyph for you. The verbose method is what you see on below. And you can see that effectively the icon is a property of these different types of icons. So you can use the symbol icon, which we map to our own font glyphs for you. Or you can customize that and use your own custom font. There's a lot of people that use their own custom font. So we allow you to do that by specifying the font icon. Or if you have an image, that's fine too. And you want to provide all the different scale factor images, you can do that as well. In the bitmap icon, we follow the pattern of the phone in which we strip out color information and do the inversion of the color on the press state for you automatically. Additionally, we have the vector-based information where you can choose your path icon as well. So hopefully you can see that this doesn't require you to use buttons anymore. We have the correct UX paradigms for these as well, and they're built into the framework. Here's, again, an example of what the command bar would look like and where you would put the primary and secondary commands. Additionally, we have a new control around the search experience. The search experience guidance is slightly adjusted in this release. John Gordner has a session about the search experience and actually goes into how the search APIs map to these new controls. But needless to say, there's a fully supported, strongly typed, XAML-esque search box control for you to use that does, again, all the UX appropriate work for you, as well as some of the difficult work around IME integration and candidate selections, character candidate selections. So if you're doing a search experience, you want to use the search box. It's fully accessible, fully localized, handles all those tough cases for you. So John Gordner has a deep dive on that. So our goal around the control space was to reduce the dependency on third-party frameworks for some core functionality. We want you to be able to extend the UI for your own custom personality, not worry about having to go and get some package, I don't know, maybe Callisto for a flyout or something like that. So my baby is dying. But that's a good thing. And we want you to be able to extend the platform for your own UI personality. Phil Japisky from Telerik is actually giving a session on how they've extended, how you can extend both the WinJS and the XAML framework to your own UI needs. Let's talk about media. Windows has always been great with media. We've always delivered high-quality rendering experience, great HD content, smooth streaming, DRM, etc. One thing that we didn't do is provide you out-of-the-box media controls. And we saw that there was two classes of people around building media experiences. Your high-end media experiences, which deliver a really highly customized, highly branded fidelity experience around playback controls. You see this in stores in the app like Netflix and Hulu, where the controls match their brand and their positioning on the screen and very specific across their endpoints. We want people to still do that, and the APIs still exist for you to build your own controls. But there's a second class of people that just say, I just need the basic playback controls. So what we've done is we've provided those for you. In accordance, again, with the UX guidelines and all the rules about which things drop off when the size gets smaller and everything. Now, this is not a control that you can template or style. You can change the colors, but this is not a control, a traditional XAML control where you template. And we've done that intentionally. We've given you the APIs. If you want to customize your own playback controls, you have them already. What we wanted to do was deliver the base core functionality in the control, in the media element. It's a very simple API. Our transport control is enabled. You set it to true, and you get those. You get the core personality. You get automatic full screen API, which does the right thing for performance and draws the true full screen on there, which delivers you better performance in XAML, better performance when there's XAML overlaid on media for those interactions. And again, if you want to have the custom experience, you can still build that in yourself. graphics. So I'm not going to do a deep dive on graphics. Our dev lead from the graphics team, B. Jordan, is here. He has a session specifically dedicated to XAML and DirectX interop, which if that is of interest to you, this is a must-see session. One of the primary ways that we did interact with DirectX content, other than surface image source and virtual surface image source, was a UI element we called a swap chain background panel. Now, the rules of the swap chain background panel dictated that it had to be the root element, and then you would draw your XAML content in there, which worked for a lot of cases. It didn't work for all cases, and we heard that feedback that you wanted to be able to specify the swap chain anywhere in your tree. So we're delivering that for you in a new element swap chain panel, and you can have interop wherever you want in your UI element tree. So for more details on that one and how it also provides independent input, go to BEAD session this week. Let's go back to the demo sheet and take a look at some media and graphics. Now, one of the things that we heard was around WebView. So I have my Sudoku game here, and I've put the add control, right? This is something that I don't even control. I've gotten the add control from the SDK. I want to monetize my Sudoku game, and I put an add control in there. It just so happens that I also have an app bar, and that pesky WebView won't get out of my way. So we're happy to say that, let's take a look at that same app that's been retargeted. No code changes, just recompiled. And now we overlay content on the WebView. This is the same WebView. I saw comments earlier. This actually is the same WebView. We have changed the underpinnings of how we do our graphic rendering to be more performant, more in line with what the system does, and how we compose the interop content a lot better. So it's not a different WebView. It is the same underlying WebView. That said, we've also enhanced the WebView for you. So let's go to Visual Studio here. And let's take a look at WebView example. Now, how many people wanted to be able to render content from their local storage onto a WebView? In order in Win8 to do that, you had to actually open the storage file, get the stream, and navigate to string API to be able to do that. It's pretty cumbersome. It didn't honor relative links. You had to do a lot of work to achieve that scenario. Now, I have a WebView in my app here. And in this app, which is already installed, I have some content that was installed. And I'm going to put an app data URI, if I type it correctly. Hopefully everything will work for me. And this is local content that's coming from my app package that's rendered in a WebView using a URI. This actual content is my friend Kuhn Svikstra, who owns XAML Spy, has this awesome tool to do diffing. So thanks, Kuhn, for letting me use that. And you can see that I have links. Links work. The style works. This is actually Bootstrap that is being rendered in here. So there's JavaScript, there's CSS, there's HTML, there's relative links. There's images, there's all sorts of things going on, rendered locally from my local package without me having to open up stream information or do anything of the sorts. The other thing that we've done in WebView is adding APIs around the completion, or basically the life cycle of what a WebView is. So if we look at one of the biggest pieces of feedback we heard from people is, I want to know when my WebView is starting to get content. I want to know when it failed, and I want to know when it's done. So we've added event life cycles around there for that, for navigating starting, completed, or errored, or failed. And that allows you to know when things are starting, be able to cancel the content or do something with that interaction. Or you saw in my example, I showed a progress ring when the navigation was starting, and when it's completed, I can stop that animation and hide that progress ring. as an example. The other life cycle thing that we've done is around other types of content. And where is my app? So one of the events that we added to WebView was being able to understand if content failed or if it had unknown content type. So I'm going to run this app, which is kind of an EPUB reader here. So EPUB as a file format is effectively a zip file with HTML content. But in theory, you want people to be able to download an EPUB, and you just want to save that to the local storage. You don't want to handle, you know, storing or extracting all the different parts. So what we have here is this is a .epub file in my local storage. And when I click it, it's actually going to render the HTML content in a web view. And I added some pagination code here. And again, I still get the full capabilities of browsing to different aspects within the application. What's happening here is two things. We're listening to the WebView's unknown content API. And so it says, oh, I got this thing called an EPUB. I don't know what that is. And it gives us a hook into it to be able to resolve that. So WebView now gives you custom URI resolvers for you to tap into that pipeline and say, I know what that is, and let me tell you how to get to the true information of that. And so what this custom resolver does is actually goes into the EPUB format, extracts it out in the right thing, finds the actual HTML, and passes the HTML content back to the WebView. That's just one example that you can do. You could imagine that you could resolve all sorts of different types of UI for this. So that's a brief on WebView. While I'm up here, I wanted to share a fun little app that I wrote. So everybody's seen the most friendliest man. So we now support UI element rendering from. So this is MetroTwit. I've taken a UI element tree, rendered it to a bitmap. I now have that stream. I could save it to a file, or I could share it out. And you have that. So if I wanted to save it to a file, I could also get that as well. So we heard your feedback around render target bitmap, and we wanted to deliver that for you. Let's go back to the slides. So what did you just see? We've done some improvements around WebView, the seamless integration into XAML, the ability to not have these airspace issues, or what we've historically called airspace issues. And what that means is that WebView is a full fidelity XAML control. I could have applied a crazy skew transform to it. I could have animated it. In most cases where you would have used a WebView brush, you may not need to anymore. There are still valid cases where you might, but for most people that actually want that interactive HTML content, but to treat it as a XAML element, you can now. We've improved the event lifecycle APIs. We've also delivering navigation control. So there's a set of APIs that allow you to control the back and forward and history of the contents within that web view. We're allowing you to render local content via URI, and in addition to that, to understand unknown content and provide your own resolvers. The security model has also been beefed up on WebView. John Hazen has a great talk on WebView here that goes into a deeper dive, and also how WebView is extended across the platform, not just for XAML developers, but for HTML developers. I also showed you render target bitmap, probably one of our number one top requests. Here's an example of what this snippet of code would look like. I create a new render target bitmap. Image grid was basically that image content, that panel with elements in it. So I render that content to there. You can see render async, everything's async. I get the pixel. This is the example of saving the image. So I get the pixels. I'm using the standard file picker API. And then I'm writing to the stream using the bitmap encoder to actually write out to disk. So a very simple, very familiar to those who may have used writable bitmap.render. Same thing in concept. OK. One of the biggest things around our team this current release has been around performance. We've taken a long, hard look at the areas where we think people like to use the features. And if you just came from Chris Anderson's session, we talked about how every feature has a cost. And that's really what we want developers to think about. We want you to develop the best applications. We want you to be productive. But we don't want your users to sacrifice their experience around your productivity. And that's an important assertion, that when your apps have a great experience, when they're performant, when they're delightful, it's only positives for your app in number of downloads and reputation and money. So Kiran Kumar is our dev lead on our team. He has a fundamentals on XAML performance, on both understanding what our framework does, why it does it that way, some of the pitfalls to avoid, and some of the best practices, and how to understand what your app is doing. He's got a great session on that tomorrow. I wanted to talk a little bit about what we've done in performance, though, in two areas, startup and large lists. So what we've done around startup performance is anything you have a keyed resource. An example of this was those theme resources. The theme resources had a dark, a light, and a high contrast, if you recall. Now, every time your app loaded, even though it was dark, we were loading light and high contrast as well. Think about generic XAML loading it three times. That's what we were doing, only in the effect that only one time, one definition was being used. So we've obviously fixed that. And you get the benefit of that as a developer as well. Anytime you have an X-keyed resource, we only load that resource when it is being used. So if I have AppXAML and I have a bunch of X-key resources, we're not going to load those until we see a static resource reference to it. And that allows you to get greater startup performance because we don't have to parse and create those objects. We also are using primitive composition for our lists, which I'll get into in a second moment to show you a specific example. And we're optimizing known XAML paths. Now, on that last one, what I mean by there is we're introducing your package content no longer contains clear text XAML. It contains what we call It contains what we call XAML binary format, which is obviously a binary format. You can see a screenshot here. That is XBF files, that is optimized node streams for how we know what the application needs for startup. The line and column information is still there for you during debug purposes, and so all that's preserved. This is a perf optimization, and we've seen improvements up to 25% startup improvements by using this just alone. This is something you get for free using Visual Studio tools. When you compile and build packages, it automatically happens for you. In fact, you have to opt out to this, and we don't want you to opt out to this. When you're using third-party references and third-party UI controls, we generate binary format for those as well for you. Yeah. So let's talk about working with large lists. One of the common pieces of feedback we heard was in the grid view and list view scenarios is that as I was panning, we see an experience of what we call on our team kind of panning to black, where I get this dead space until everything can get caught up. That was a huge focus area for us for Windows 8.1. And we wanted to improve on that experience in both our grid view and list view areas. So I want to share with you some of our internal videos on, as we were checking in these features, what they looked like and some of the differences here. So what you're seeing in this first video on the left side is Windows 8. Sorry. Yes. Your left side is Windows 8.1, and the right side is Windows 8. And even though they're touching two different buttons, it's the same app, but you'll see the difference. This first video is under a high-speed camera, so you can see the nanosecond difference, and then I'll show you the real-time video in a moment. So again, this is the same data templates, the same data, the same network calls, everything's the same, except how we render. So a significant improvement in just the startup alone of that area. And we do this through rendering all those elements that are needed in this grid view through our own primitive composition. What we found was people using lists may not have been using the selection UI or some of the animation UI that is part of the default templates, but they weren't removing those elements. So every time you were creating a grid view and you weren't doing selection, you were still having the cost of creating roughly 14 elements per item that probably weren't ever being used. By moving to primitive composition and exposing APIs for you to opt into those things, we draw only what we need to draw based on what you tell us, and you don't have to retemplate. So here it is in real time to give kind of a true user feel. So even under high speed, it kind of is a little dramatic. But even in real time, you see that's a pretty significant improvement here. And this is what we think is an average data template with an image background, some text blocks, and some things, some borders, et cetera. The other area we wanted to focus on was panning. And this is that panning to black. I'm just going to play the video and let it speak for itself, and you can figure out which one is the improvement. So we spent a lot of time in the grid view and list view areas improving the performance for you. And being able to have you take advantage of these, we have now made these the new defaults in these controls. So anyone creating new Windows 8.1 applications, get these by default. For you that are migrating, we have sections in the migration doc to be able to migrate to those. In addition, so what you saw in that panning one is the fastest capability, and we've kind of throttled it. By default, we're going to give you a great experience. We give you simple APIs to improve user perception. We have a placeholder API that you can just say, you know what, just show me placeholders if the UI can't keep up. And we'll show you kind of gray containers to give the user the perception that content is there, and we'll get to it when we can. And noticeably, even that alone is an amazing performance perceived perception increase. However, we also are providing lower-level APIs, which is what you saw in the video, for you to be a part of that rendering pipeline to tell us what phases and under what phases which content that we should render. If you think that text block is more important, then you tell us. If you think the border is the last thing that we should render, then you tell us. Now, that's more of a lower-level eventing API, so you're going to have to write code to do that. But we have some things that the tooling team is going to help us out with. And Chipala on my team has a session specifically around these improvements, around the startup of lists, what we call presenters, grid view and list view presenters, and the panning experience. If you're working with large lists, you need to go to this session to make sure that you understand what are the new actual literal APIs that we're providing you. Let's talk about text and input now. So text and input, I think, are things that we take for granted. You know, we put a text block and we set text, and it just works. And we take a lot of that for granted. One of the things that we heard feedback on is hyperlink within rich text. This is what people had to do with hyperlink button. We fixed that. We have hyperlink for you. It's very simple to put in there. It's exactly what you would expect. There's a slew of text improvements that we've done. We have alignment APIs that you will see in the Visual Studio templates in this iteration. Those should go away because we've built them into the framework styles in the final release. But allows you to do text layout snapping, so snapping to baseline and trimming side bearings in a lot of typography settings. You may have seen in some of my screenshots where I've had placeholder text on edit controls. So text box and password box now have, by default, placeholder text properties in there for you to put watermark text automatically. We also, on what we call input controls, so the date picker, text boxes, combo boxes, we've added a header property for you to put something that is going to be positioned right above there. So if you're doing forms over data, you don't need to create a stack panel with all your stuff anymore. Just say text box, header, enter your first name, and we'll draw the label for you. A big thing we heard was selection color. We've added the ability to be able to, through an API, not just a color override, for you to say, hey, it's text selection color, I want to be red. Simple API pleases a lot of people. So we've had a lot of improvements in the text area. If you're an emoji fan, you can now do color fonts. We render that automatically. So you can see a significant amount of improvements in the text area. In the input area, we've done a lot of things under the hood that usually don't surface to developers, but we've also exposed a couple new APIs that give you more precision and more data in your manipulations. So we now allow more smooth panning programmatically. So if you wanted to kind of programmatically respond to something, but you want it to animate smoothly within your scroll viewer, we now have that API for you via this API called Change View. And it will animate as if somebody is actually doing a direct manipulation with their finger. Even in that animation, panning, we give you information that is predictive. So if you're in a game and you happen to need to know, hey, at the end of this manipulation, where will I be? We're giving you predictive information during that manipulation to say, I think this manipulation is happening over this course of time. It should land here at XY. So that could be helpful in certain situations. We allow you to combine the manipulation modes, combining system manipulation with other type of manipulation modes, which you couldn't do. One of the demos that I wanted to show was this concept of locking scrolling areas. So here I have, if I can go to the demo machine. Here I have an example of what looks like an Excel-like experience. And I have grids and this kind of typical thing of this header and column. And as I scroll to the left, you can see that the column is locked. And as I scroll to the top, you can see that the header is locked. And if I do the diagonal, you can see that they both move accordingly. Yeah. So this is a feature on Scroll Viewer, which we call basically top header, left header are the APIs. We just call this kind of free scrolling or scroll locking. And it allows you to build these kind of experiences. Can we go back to the slides, please? I think we just made a bunch of data grid people happy. So binding. There's probably some, I don't know if Rocky's here, but hopefully the first one will please him. So we've added some improvements to the binding engine. One thing that we've noticed about binding is it is a feature. People love the feature. It doesn't come with a free cost because we do a lot of work for you. Going back to that theme of performance, we wanted to make sure that we optimized as best we could the features that people were using. We've improved binding up to 40% performance improvement for binding cases. In addition to that, we've added these features that people have requested. And so you can see these are the common binding features, being able to access the binding expression, setting target null value and fallback value, and update source trigger. One of the other things the platform did was deliver the API around dependency object collection, which may mean nothing to you directly, but if you're a blend behavior user, that means everything to you. And yeah. So in Uni's session, he will introduce you to what they're working on for a behaviors SDK delivered on top of the platform. I'm going to skip binding just given time. The other thing we've done is around the navigation stack. One of the most common things we heard is being able to control the journaling of the navigation stack. That I want to be able to inject things before and after stack. So we have a very simple API. We call it a page stack entry. You create a page stack entry, and you inject it into either the forward stack or the back stack. And the history is retained, allows you to control that navigation, kind of providing you with that consistent flow of navigation for your application. There is a lot more things that we've done in the platform, for sure. We now have multi-mon DPI awareness. So you saw that the ability to kind of have multiple apps on different monitors. You may have a laptop that has a really high DPI, like the Surface Pro that most of you will be getting, and you're going to project to a screen that maybe has a low DPI, and you want to be able to make sure your app responds there. So when your app goes from the higher resolution to the lower resolution, we now know about that. We will re-request the resources, relay out things as appropriate, do the right scale factor for you automatically. High contrast awareness. Before, when a user had to switch high contrast, they had to restart their application. Again, this is that benefit of that theme resource. So as your app is running, there's no more need to restart your application to do any of those theme changes. It automatically happens. There was a session this morning on accessibility. We've done a ton of improvements around accessibility for things like narrator scenarios, as well as just general UI automation aspects. And I think that's something that we as developers take for granted quite a bit, and we've made a good improvement there to make sure that our accessible needs users, by default out of the box, are getting what they need. It's an important area. We've added new programmatic animations and mouse wheel support to Flip View to create those slideshow experiences that have smooth animations as well. In addition, there's a PDF render API that is not delivered by our team, but usually rendered through through some XAML brush that allows you to do that. So you can now render PDFs in XAML. All right. So in the XAML area alone, we've introduced over 650 new APIs in the Windows 8.1 release. We're really pleased about what we delivered for you in the XAML framework and all of the UI platform frameworks. We hope that you are pleased as well. We hope that your favorite feature was there. And we want to make sure that we deliver a framework to you, for you that is great out of the box, performance out of the box, and that you can focus on delivering the great user experience and writing beautiful applications with high performance. So thank you for coming to the session. I will be doing a Q&A with Channel 9 immediately after this session. I encourage you to participate in that as well. And I will be available throughout the office hours in the big room in the Windows area for the rest of the conference. And happy to answer any of your questions, help you through migrations of the platform at any needs. We want you to be successful, and we're here to make sure that you are successful. In addition, there's an area in the big room where there's platform enablers and API developers that will be showing you how to use their APIs in conjunction with our UI frameworks, and I'll be helping out in those areas as well. So I want to be available to you. Thank you again so much for the apps that you've built and the feedback that you've provided. Please keep it coming. And thank you again, and enjoy the rest of the conference.